The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
My name is Andrea Fella, for those of you who I haven't met yet. I've been away for a little while, so it's nice to be back. Tonight, continuing the series on the paramis, on the 10 qualities that we cultivate along this path. Tonight I'll be talking about energy. Last week was a talk on wisdom, and in this list of the paramis, and for those of you who haven't been here, I'll just name them. Virtue or generosity, virtue, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, loving kindness, determination, and equanimity are these qualities that we're talking about in these 10 weeks. And it's said that they're in this order partly because each previous one supports the cultivation of the next one, and the next one kind of finishes or polishes off the cultivation of the previous one. Although it's not said that they have to be cultivated in sequence, but that they are related in this way. So energy lies between wisdom and patience. And following wisdom is actually an important point for energy, because energy itself is a neutral quality. It's a quality of mind, of energy of mind, directing the mind to do. It's just this quality that motivates, not really motivates, but just this kind of sense of direction, of directing the mind to do something. And that direction can go in many ways. So that flow of energy can be towards something very wholesome and skillful, or something unwholesome or unskillful. So in terms of this quality of energy being cultivated as a quality that supports our path, it's important that it be informed by wisdom, by the understanding in particular of what is skillful and what is unskillful with respect to leading us away from suffering. That's the fundamental definitions of wisdom is what leads us, what the understanding of skillful and unskillful in terms of what leads us away from suffering. And so that understanding is crucial in terms of the cultivation of energy, that when energy is cultivated, that it be cultivated to head us in that direction towards freedom from suffering. That's what makes it a parami, or a perfection. Another definition for parami is perfection, a quality that's perfected as we travel this path, this spiritual journey. So another way to look at this cultivation of energy is through how our energy directs us towards an understanding of the Four Noble Truths, which is another one of the definitions of wisdom. The cultivation of energy towards understanding suffering, energy towards letting go of the cause of suffering, the energy towards the realization of the ending of suffering, and the energy towards the cultivation of the path leading to the ending of suffering. So really we think about the cultivation of energy with respect to the cultivation of other wholesome, beautiful qualities like generosity, kindness, wisdom, concentration, mindfulness. So in a sense, we look at the cultivation of all of the beautiful qualities of the paramis as being supported by this quality of energy. There's one statement in one of the texts on this list of 10 qualities, and it says, it's entirely through the spiritual power of energy that the practice of all the requisites of enlightenment succeeds. It's entirely through the spiritual power of energy that the practice of all the requisites of enlightenment succeeds. So energy is crucial. It's crucial. If we don't have energy, we're not going to be applying our effort. And there's this interesting back and forth between energy and effort. And I'll talk more about this, but often we think that we need energy in order to make effort. And we do, to some extent, need some energy in order to make effort. But effort also cultivates energy. So it goes both ways. And I'll talk about that more as the evening goes on. So the definition of energy in this context of this list of 10 qualities is energy towards the practice, energy towards the movement to wake up, energy towards the letting go of these unskillful qualities. Other definitions of the term that's translated as energy, the Pali term is virya, and other definitions or translations for that term are courage or zeal. And courage is an interesting aspect of energy, because it does take courage to meet our experience at times. That part of what we are asked to do in this practice is to understand our suffering. We're asked to understand what causes our sorrow, our grief, our anger, our frustration, to observe that, to understand it. And when we meet that in our experience, it can be challenging. So it takes energy and it takes courage. So those two qualities together are part of this quality of energy as a parami. So there's a bunch of factors or things that support energy. And actually, energy, many of you probably know that the Buddha created a lot of lists. He devised a lot of lists as teaching devices to help people remember various things. And the quality of energy is found in quite a few of these lists. It's found in the 10 paramis, which we're talking about. It's found in the 5 faculties of conviction, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. It's found in the 7 factors of awakening, of mindfulness, investigation, energy, rapture, concentration, tranquility, and equanimity. And it's found in a kind of a tangential way in the 4 Noble Truths through the Eightfold Path, the aspect of right effort. So it's found in quite a few of these lists. And in looking at these lists, because all of these lists tend to have some kind of directionality to them, we can get some sense of what supports the cultivation of energy. So one of them is one of the qualities that's said to support the cultivation of energy is a sense of some kind of spiritual urgency. A sense that there must be some way out of the kind of predicament of humanity, of this kind of inherent suffering of being human. So a sense of that spiritual urgency can be a motivator to have us start on this path and brings some energy along with it. Confidence is another piece that supports energy. If we have some sense of what we're trying to do, have a sense that it's possible to do it, have a sense that it's beneficial for us, and have a sense that we have the capacity to do it, all of those things support our movement to make effort. If we see that there's something possible, that it's beneficial, and that we have the capacity, if we have that confidence, there's a kind of a natural movement to engage. That's another way that energy is supported. Investigation, interest, and curiosity is another way that that energy comes into our practice. If we start observing what's happening, if we start investigating our experience and get interested in what's happening, that interest, if we are observing what's happening and we start to see things and understand how things are connected and related to each other, that interest that's generated through the actual observation also can kind of bring the spark of, oh, wow, this is interesting, and brings a sense of energy, of purpose as well. So the cultivation of these qualities of confidence, of investigation, of interest, of curiosity, these will all support the factor of energy to arise. Another piece that cultivates or supports the cultivation of energy is wisdom, which is the parami immediately preceding this. Just this, the understanding of what's skillful and unskillful supports the development of appropriate energy towards the practice, of appropriate effort. Because without that understanding, without that wisdom, the energy can be moving every which way. So there's one teaching that really talks about how to cultivate this energy skillfully. And this is a teaching on right effort. This is the teaching in the Eightfold Path on how to cultivate energy skillfully. So effort is another way that we cultivate energy. So I'm going to take some time to actually talk about right effort, because it is such an important piece with respect to energy. So they're not the same thing. Effort and energy are not the same thing. If you think about the creation of energy, like, you know, electrical energy, there's some kind of device or something, you know, a turbine that water turns, or, you know, a windmill that's turned by the wind that in turn generates the electricity. There's something that essentially churns, and energy is the result. So those two things are distinct. The action taken and the energy are two distinct things. And likewise in the practice, the effort and the energy that results are distinct things. So, right effort, if we talk about effort, right effort basically takes as its foundation this understanding of what is skillful and what is unskillful. So it's about cultivating, right effort is about cultivating wholesome qualities and letting go or abandoning unwholesome qualities. So just as a reminder, wholesome qualities of mind are those that are the ones that support us to let go of greed, aversion, and delusion. Essentially, they're states based in non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion. States like generosity, compassion, kindness, tranquility, equanimity. Unwholesome states of mind are those that are based in greed, aversion, delusion. Say it's like anger, frustration, irritation, avarice, excitement. Unwholesome states of mind tend to lead us into suffering. They tend to lead us into dissatisfaction, where the term suffering is kind of a heavy term, but the Pali term of dukkha is it's a much subtler term than suffering. The term dukkha basically means the du part of the word means bad or something like bad, and the ka part refers to wheel. So dukkha basically means a wheel that doesn't spin very well, you know, so a wheel out of round. So, you know, the kind of just like lopsided feeling of a wheel out of round. So that conveys a little bit more of the kind of subtlety that we're talking about. Other translations for dukkha, dissatisfaction, unease, discontent. They could convey a different feeling than suffering. So suffering seems to be a kind of a big word for us. So the unwholesome states are the ones that lead us to these feelings of just like dissatisfaction, discontent. So there's four kinds of right effort, and they relate to cultivating wholesome and letting go of unwholesome. So I'll name them, and I'll have some patience with the phrasing here. The first kind of right effort is effort towards the non-arising of unwholesome states that have not yet arisen. Three negatives in that sentence. I'll go through each one of these separately. So then there's the effort towards the abandoning of unwholesome states that have arisen. Then there's the effort towards the arising or the arousal of wholesome states that have not yet arisen, and the effort towards the sustaining of wholesome states that have arisen. So those are the four, and I'll go over them, each one. So the first, the effort towards the non-arising of unwholesome states that have not arisen. Sounds a little obscure, but it really just amounts to observing through our experience what situations, what causes and conditions lead to our dissatisfaction, our suffering, our unease. What are the causes and conditions for our dissatisfaction? And then avoiding those conditions or finding ways to avoid the causes of those states. So it's a kind of an avoidance. Basically, we understand through experience what leads us to suffering, and we don't go there. So that can be a kind of a simple avoidance. I mean, one way you might look at it is if you have like different political views from someone you're close to, and you find that every time you have that discussion, it lands you into an argument. Maybe you just don't go there with that person. That's one way of working with this kind of right effort. And it's that kind of simple thing. We avoid unwholesome states that are not present. It's an avoidance of unwholesome states that are not present. But the teaching is actually subtler than simply, you know, kind of just trying to avoid unpleasantness. It's more about investigating the causes and conditions for our suffering. So for instance, suppose you notice that every time you meet with somebody, there's a feeling of agitation that arises. Every time you meet with a particular person, there's a feeling of agitation that arises. Well, the kind of obvious thing in terms of the read of this teaching, avoiding unwholesome states that have not arisen, is to avoid that person. But that's not what the teaching is about. It's about looking at the causes for the underlying causes for the suffering. So the underlying causes for the agitation internally in our minds. What's happening in this interaction that this feeling of agitation arises? So an investigation, an exploration internally of the experience when you meet the person. It might be that the approach to this first kind of right effort would be knowing that you're meeting this person, knowing that you have an appointment with this person, have a kind of an interest to explore what happens. What's going on that this agitation happens? As opposed to going into the interaction with the sense of dread of, oh, I know I'm going to get agitated. Get curious about the fact that that the agitation arises. See if you can explore what's happening. Understanding those causes goes a long way towards the letting go of the suffering that results. And this may not be a quick thing. This kind of exploration can take time. But it's a very helpful way to look at our experience. What's happening? What are the causes that are happening, especially right now? What's happening right now in my experience? Not to think about not to like go back to past and like, well, this person reminds me of that other person and that's why. What's happening right here and right now? That's where the exploration can be done. And where actually a lot of the freedom, can happen. Because when we see how suffering is constructed in the moment, we can begin to take a step back and it begins to dismantle itself. So that's the first kind of right effort. The second kind of right effort is the effort to abandon unwholesome states that have arisen. So this means basically that when we notice states that are based in greed, aversion, delusion, when we notice a state of anger, for instance, that we try the teaching is to abandon it. Now this abandoning or letting go, this letting go of unwholesome states can have an active quality to it. It can have a quality of seeing that this mind state isn't so helpful. So, can I let go of it? And there are other ways also to actively let go of a state like that. You might, for instance, redirect your attention to something else. If anger arises, you could redirect your attention to something else just so that it's not grabbing you quite so hard. Often when we get into a state like anger, the mind spins. It just spins into thoughts that keep the anger going. And if we can just kind of turn our attention away from that and towards something more neutral, sometimes that's a form of letting go, just turning the attention to something else. Not in a repressing way, but just in a gentle way to say, okay, I'm just going to turn my attention over here. So there are ways that letting go or that abandoning of these qualities, these unwholesome qualities, can have an active feeling of letting go. But in my experience, much of the time, this letting go has more to do with letting be than any kind of active letting go. That the actual exploration of what is this state, turning towards the experience of anger or frustration or irritation, and just exploring what's happening right here and now in the mind and body, turning the attention towards the experience and away from the thing in the world that is triggering the experience. That process That takes a leap of faith at times. That turning towards a difficult experience like that can take a leap of faith, because it sounds so counterintuitive to turn towards a feeling that is so difficult. Everything in our experience, everything in our training, everything in our background tells us fix something in the environment so that this feeling will go away. And we don't quite understand how it would work to turn our attention towards this feeling. But it does have a kind of a lubricative property. Mindfulness is like a lubricant. It lubricates that feeling and gives some space around it so that we see that quality or that experience not as something that is tied to me, that I am angry, but it becomes just more a process. And as it becomes more a process, then it's easier to be with and to just simply let it do its thing. Emotions have a life. These difficult emotions have a life. They're kind of wave-like. They peak, they crest, and then they diminish. And if we're not in our minds churning around and keeping them amped up, they will flow out. So this process of turning towards these experiences, these difficult emotions, is the process of essentially allowing them to live their life in a natural way, and they will tend to dissipate. This is much of our practice. Much of our mindfulness practice falls in this category of right effort. Turning our attention to difficult states of mind and letting them be. Just letting them be. The third kind of right effort is the effort to arouse wholesome states that have not yet arisen. So this is the effort towards cultivating these beautiful qualities, all of these qualities of the paramis, generosity, kindness, truthfulness, wisdom, equanimity, all of these qualities can be cultivated actively. So there's actually two ways to cultivate wholesome qualities. There's a way that we can actively cultivate them in a positive way, such as the practice of loving kindness, which actively cultivates the quality of loving kindness through a practice of speaking or saying with intentionality phrases of kindness. So may you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be safe. May you live with ease. That directing those phrases towards a person begins to engender the feeling of kindness towards that person. So that's an actual active cultivation of the quality. Another way to explore this kind of right effort is through avoiding actions that are counter to these beautiful qualities of mind. So, for instance, if you want to cultivate contentment, refraining from taking what is not given is one way to cultivate contentment. So refraining from quality or states of mind and behavior that oppose these qualities of mind. If you're stealing things, if you're taking things that are not given, then there's a kind of a sense of neediness, of discontent somehow, that there's something I need that I don't have. So they're just qualities that or actions will support the cultivation of some beautiful qualities. Right speech, for instance, the cultivation of right speech supports the cultivation of truthfulness, of kindness, because the right speech includes not speaking harshly. It includes a cultivation of a kind of a bringing together, because I don't know quite the right word for it, but there's that abstaining from divisive speech, abstaining from speech that divides people, brings a kind of a harmony. So it's a kind of a harmonizing quality. So cultivating right speech by abstaining from particular kinds of speech, refraining from false speech, harsh speech, divisive speech, idle chatter, those cultivate more of these wholesome qualities in the mind. We can also cultivate mindfulness. Mindfulness itself is a wholesome quality. We cultivate mindfulness through bringing our attention to our experience. And that itself is cultivating a wholesome quality. Just the act of cultivating mindfulness on whatever you're paying attention to is cultivating a wholesome quality. The fourth kind of right effort is the effort to sustain wholesome states that have arisen. So this is about when wholesome qualities have arisen, when states of joy, of generosity, of kindness, when you're experiencing them, finding ways to sustain them. And I've actually noticed a tendency in my own experience. This may not be a general tendency, but in my own experience, I've noticed a tendency when I'm experiencing a beautiful quality of mind to kind of think that they're not as important somehow, you know? That, you know, I on one retreat, I noticed that, I was working really hard to, you know, stay with the breath and finally, you know, got a little bit of calm. And the mind settled down and it calmed down. And as soon as I really felt into that calm, the next thing the mind did was say, oh, that's nice. Now is a perfect time to work on that pain in my back. So to, you know, kind of move away from the calm to work on something else. So I found that, you know, in my own experience that I have to kind of remind myself, this is actually something that's worth attending to. And in my experience also, one of the best ways to cultivate these beautiful qualities when they have arisen is to be aware of them, be mindful of them, recognize them. When you're happy, take in that fact of happiness. When you're feeling generous, take in that experience. What does that feel like? What does generosity feel like? What does it feel like to be calm, to be peaceful? Don't just like go over these states. It's like, oh, I've got things to do. It feels peaceful right now, but I got all of this list to check off. I've got to finish all these things. Take in the experience. It's very supportive. So talking about right effort in this way, the distinct pieces, makes it sound like you're working on one or another of them. But actually, they can be seen as just four sides of a single process. So for instance, if you are cultivating mindfulness by observing anger, you are looking, you're allowing your mindful awareness to take in the feeling, the experience of anger. This supports the letting go of this anger. So it supports that, that's the letting be. It's supporting that letting be of that anger. It also helps to create the conditions for the future, and also helps to prevent the arising of any reactivity to the anger. So it's supporting the non-arising of other unwholesome states around the anger. If you're not being mindful of the anger, there can be a lot of reactivity around the anger, frustration, irritation, or just a kind of a spiraling of the anger, getting into a rage because it's got this feedback loop. And when we bring our mindfulness to it, it kind of cuts into that feedback loop so that it doesn't continue to build. So those are the first two kinds of right effort. It's the letting go of or letting be of a state, an unwholesome state that has arisen. And it's the avoiding the arising of unwholesome states that have not arisen. So the cutting into that cycle of anger is avoiding it spiraling out of control. Then you are also supporting the arousing and sustaining of mindfulness, concentration, equanimity. Many beautiful qualities are coming along with that mindfulness of the anger. So all four of these, we don't really have to think so much if we're using mindfulness. Mindfulness itself incorporates all four right efforts. So we don't really have to think too much about which one am I doing. Just bringing the mindfulness to our experience with the understanding that we observe our experience to see where we move towards suffering and where we can let go of suffering. So mindfulness itself incorporates them, incorporates the right efforts. So this idea about effort and energy, those two pieces, that we do need some energy in order to make this effort. But we actually don't need that much energy in order to make some effort. We need a little bit. We need a little bit of energy to make a little bit of effort. And when we make that little bit of effort, it generates energy. And then that energy can go back to feed into making more effort. So the whole process of generating energy, this skillful energy, kind of bootstraps itself. It brings itself up from a very basic amount of energy that we just have from the fact of living, of sitting here, of the fact that we're alive. There's a kind of a natural energy. That's all we need to start with. So right now, for instance, how much energy does it take? And how much effort does it take for you to recognize the feeling of your butt on your chair or cushion or bench? How about your hands? Feel your hands. It doesn't take that much effort. In a split second, it doesn't take much effort. What is challenging is to sustain it. So this is really the challenge for us, is the sustaining of effort. So we make this effort through mindfulness to bring our attention to our experience. And what we need to do is to have a gentle persistence. Just each moment, remembering to notice, what am I aware of? What am I aware of right now? In a very gentle way. So balancing the effort so that it's neither too forceful nor too lax. There's one kind of... I like this sutta, so I'm going to share it with you. It's a short one. It is somebody asking the Buddha how he became enlightened. How did he let go of all of the sources of suffering? And he asked in the terms of an analogy. He said, how did you, dear sir, cross the flood of greed, aversion, and delusion? How did you cross the flood? And the Buddha replied, without tarrying, friend, and without hurrying did I cross the flood. But how did you, dear sir, without tarrying, without hurrying, cross the flood? When, friend, I tarried, then I sank. When I hurried, I was swept away. And so, friend, without tarrying, without hurrying, did I cross the flood. So that's the, I bring that to my mind sometimes when I'm in meditation, without tarrying, without hurrying, just a very steady, gentle, keep being aware. When we sit down to meditate, sometimes, you know, if we sit down for half an hour to meditate, sometimes it's like we try to pick up the whole 30 minutes in the first minute of the sitting. I'm going to be present for the whole 30 minutes. It's actually more helpful to simply be present for a half a breath. This is what Joseph Goldstein, one of my teachers, calls the secret teaching of meditation. That all the energy you need to put in, the only amount of effort you really need to make is the amount of effort it takes to stay with a half a breath. Right now. Can you be with an in-breath? And when that in-breath ends, can you be with the out-breath? In that way, just very, that's all the effort we need. We just need to keep remembering to apply that little bit of effort each half breath. That's where the effort comes in. Just a reminder. And that reminder doesn't even have to be very strong. And we'll forget. No question about it. We will forget. The mind will wander. And when the mind comes back from wandering, just to recognize, first of all, that you're back, you're mindful again, and just what's happening right now, and what's happening right now, and what's happening right now. In a very gentle way, pulling. It's like we can pull ourselves along half breath by half breath. Very gentle. So it's best not to think about trying to sustain it over a long period of time, but just make the effort you need for a half a breath or for a couple of seconds. One thing that I sometimes do when I get into the midst of meditation, and I think we are a culture of over-efforters. A lot of striving, you know, gotta do it right, gotta figure it out. So I think we can all benefit from this kind of relaxing back a little bit. Relaxing back so that we're not pushing so hard into the meditation. Not trying to be such a good meditator. Just half a breath. That's all. Just half a breath. But a kind of an exploration I make for myself when I'm in the midst of a meditation is, to ask myself, how little effort do I need to make to be mindful? So part of this is about the frequency of reminding yourself to be mindful. The frequency. So as you start at the beginning of a meditation, you probably need to remind yourself every half breath. Next breath. And the noting, the in, out can support that. That's a way to kind of remind yourself, kind of a prompting of the awareness. As you settle into the meditation, you might find you don't need quite so much prompting. Just see how long the mindfulness will continue without the kind of active efforting of it. After a while, the mindfulness does start to kind of take on a life of its own, and you can just remind yourself a little less frequently. So it's kind of tuning the level of reminding to how aware you are, how present you are. This takes a kind of an understanding of what this mindfulness feels like. What does it feel like to be aware? Another teaching that I find helpful is just to make the best effort that you can given the circumstances that you're in. There's no need to berate yourself if you're having trouble being present, if you're really sleepy. Just make the best effort that you can given the circumstances. If you're really agitated because you've come out of a really busy day of work, we can't really expect our minds to calm down and settle and be quiet immediately. Just make the best gentle effort and the mind will slowly settle. It will slowly respond. If you're using that agitated energy to try to stay with the breath, that will just increase the agitation, in a sense. If that agitation is what's fueling the, oh, I gotta be with the next breath, gotta be with the next breath, gotta be with the next breath, that's fueling the agitation. So just make the best effort that you can given the circumstances. And this to me is where we lead into the next parami. The next quality is patience. The one that we'll talk about next week, patience. This gentle persistence of just half a breath, half a breath. The gentle persistence of making the effort. Persistence is an aspect of patience. That willingness to just persist, just gently persist, is one of the ways that patience begins. So this is the way that energy segues into patience, through this gentle persistence. And it takes patience because it is so challenging. We do. Our minds wander. We sit down, we try to pay attention to the breath, we try to stay, keep our attention in the present moment, and the mind wanders off. When we notice the mind has wandered off, that's just what's happened. Just that's where the patience is supportive. To not beat ourselves up over the fact that our minds have wandered, just to recognize it's okay, it's like this. Just keep trying. Make that gentle, persistent effort. Patience. So, effort and energy are crucial for the path. I'll just do a little recap here. And it doesn't really make sense to think about contemplating energy in the absence or in the abstract, because it's a neutral quality. So it's helpful to think about cultivating energy in conjunction with cultivating wholesome qualities and letting go of unwholesome qualities. That assures that our energy is directed towards this freedom, this movement towards letting go of suffering. Energy needs to be balanced. We can't apply all the energy at once. It needs to be really gently cultivated. And tuning the level of effort in this way of how frequently you remind yourself, that's the tuning of effort, is that how frequently you remind yourself, not how much forcefulness are you putting into your trying to be mindful. In a particular moment, you can't really be more mindful than just noticing your butt on the chair. That's what you can do in a moment. The continuity of mindfulness, as we gently, persistently make that effort to sustain the mindfulness, it's the continuity of mindfulness that begins to cultivate the power of the mindfulness, the ability for it to really see deeply into how our suffering is constructed. So it's the continuity that's important, and it's this gentle, persistent effort that leads to the energy that makes that continuity possible. So there's a quote that I'd like to read that reminds us that the power for walking this path lies in our own hands. We have the power, we have the capacity to make the effort to wake up. Here's this quote. "We must, by our own resolute efforts, rise and make our way to the portals of liberty. And it is always, in every moment, in our power to do so. Neither are these portals locked and the key in possession of someone else from whom it must be obtained by prayer or entreaty. That door is free of all bolts and bars, save those that we ourselves have made." That's where the courage comes in. The willingness to unlock those bars and bolts. So, using energy skillfully, we cultivate the conditions that lead to this release, that lead to letting go, lead to this freedom from suffering. But we can't make that release happen. We can cultivate the conditions, but we can't make the release happen. That's why we really have to be so patient with hanging out with mindfulness, with our experience, because we can't make it shift. We can't make our mind suddenly see, oh, this is just an arising of anger. That's all it is. It's not me. It's not mine. Another definition of wisdom, the understanding that what happens is just impersonal causes and conditions going on. So we can't make that transformation or that understanding happen, but we can cultivate the conditions. One of my teachers, Kamala Masters, tells a story of a time when she was in a state where things were going okay, but nothing much was happening. Just, you know, it's like nothing bad was happening, but nothing much else was happening either. And she went and reported this to her teacher, and he said, "When the fruit is ripe, it will fall from the tree." And I like this analogy because it demonstrates that this practice is about this kind of ripening of fruit. If we have a fruit tree, we can't make the fruit ripen. That is nature's job. Nature makes the fruit ripen. But we can support the ripening by providing nourishment for the soil and water and pruning the tree and taking care of the conditions that support the ripening. That's what we can do with our energy. Support the conditions that lead towards this release. So we have a couple of minutes if there's any comments or questions. Or... yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, sorry, wait for the mic.
I wondered if you talked at all about what you do when you're vacationing or around a group of people for whom loving kindness is not a strong value or a norm. And in fact, they may even have the opposite kinds of values that have to do with trying to shame each other and so forth, and how you respond to something like that.
Hmm. That's a challenging situation. Partly because, you know, when we're in a group like that, was this a group that you were traveling with, or was it people that you just kind of came in contact with?
People I traveled to be with.
Okay.
In other words, parts of family.
Okay, okay. Yes, this is, this comes up. Partly, you know, we can't change other people. So part of it is letting go of the sense of, needing them to be different. That's part of it. Sometimes we go into the situation with this feeling like they've got to change. And that is a recipe for suffering because we can't make them change. So part of it has to be, you know, kind of an acceptance of who they are so that, and that itself helps, I think, us from being so reactive. I mean, part of what's happening is the reactivity to the patterns. And in family in particular, you know, families will tend to try to draw us into old patterns. You know, it's like if we're moving away from patterns, they'll do what they can to kind of pull us back into the dynamics that they're comfortable with and familiar with. So that can be challenging. All I can say is that it takes time. Be patient and to continue to look internally to see if you can let go of a need to change them and to, in a sense, take the time you need to protect yourself as well. You know?
And that's the piece of it that I'm more concerned about. I feel like I've done a lot of work on letting go of not needing to change them.
Mm-hmm.
But the other piece of how we protect ourselves from these kinds of speech patterns and all kinds of toxicity. That's an interesting topic.
Yeah, that's a long topic. part of what, again, we can't control their behavior. So if it's speech coming at you that's toxic, what you can do is, it can only impact you in the, in your sort of giving it someplace to land in you. So, that's our work in, you know, protecting yourself as you need to in terms of taking a break from the family or, you know, going off and giving yourself some time to recharge by yourself, taking a walk or giving yourself some space and, allowing yourself to breathe and let go of some of the difficulty. And when we're engaged with them, to really begin to understand where are these things landing in us and can we let go of some of those places. There doesn't have to be any place for those things to land. They can just go right through.
I sometimes feel it's almost like, and then I'll stop, needing to create Teflon inside.
That's a great analogy, yes. In fact, Gil sometimes talks about mindfulness creating Teflon mind. That essentially the mindfulness allows us to, you know, it's like non-reactivity. Mindfulness cultivates non-reactivity. And so when something comes in like that, it's just like, that's just a hearing. That's all that's happening is hearing that's happening. And, you know, partly not necessarily needing to respond can also help, you know, to just working with that Teflon quality.
Yeah. Thank you.
And we have to stop, unfortunately. But if you'd like, I can stay for a few minutes and we can talk afterwards. So thank you all. And see you next week.